Live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin, along with former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer and Pastor Bradley. Join us for a roundtable discussion of what's in the news today. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Wednesday morning again. My name is Robin, and Cindy is still on assignment. We have also sitting here at the round table, Cliff and Bradley. Say hi, good morning, guys.
A gracious good morning to you, too.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
The gracious good morning thing reminds me, and I can't think of her name, the gal on the telephone operator on, my memory is gone.
The one wingy dingy.
Yeah,
sure. This is good morning to you. Is this the person to whom I am speaking?
Exactly. That's the one.
Yes.
I can't remember the program. Hee-haw or something like that?
It's Saturday Night Live, I think, with Lily Tomlin.
Well, Lily Tomlin, but it wasn't Saturday Night Live. It was because I never watched Saturday Night Live. But it was one of those like that, though.
Yeah. Back in the good old days.
Yeah, Lily Tomlin is funny. Then she became a lush, and then I think she's getting straight again and actually doing some parts in movies and things.
I don't know. I haven't really followed her that much.
I really liked the things that she did, and it's really sad that when people have that much money and could do so many other things, they end up going to drugs for some reason or other, or booze or whatever.
Booze. Now, some people don't handle success very well. Anyways, welcome to Oregon Update, the show that asks the question, why are we here? No. But let me get the promos out of the way first. Our call-in number, if you'd like to join the show, 646-721-9887. You can call us on this or any other topic. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter. You can also listen to us on iTunes. Join us right now in the chat room or send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. Nobody can accuse us of not being accessible.
Really? Really? We're there. All you have to do is look for us. Don't even have to look hard.
That's right. And after the big, long promo list, okay, that's all we have time for the show right now.
And one of the things we don't do is open houses or town halls on Twitter.
That's right.
And it sounds like a great idea when I heard about it on television, but I've gone there and tried to make sense of it and haven't been able to, really.
Oh, that's just like Facebook. You know, when I set up the Facebook page for KRBN, I can't say anything nice about it, except for the fact I think I lost about half my hair and definitely turned gray with what was left. It was just the only way I got any help on how to set up Facebook on the RSS feed was through a third-party help system, not through Facebook itself, and then I just finally decided to abandon that and do live updates.
Yeah.
Figure what, you know, why echo? If you want to listen to the archives, you know, you can get it from caribbeanradio.com or from iTunes or from Blog Talk Radio itself. I mean, we don't need Facebook.
Well, KRBNradio.com has it in two different places, so it's really easy to get a hold of. So, really easy to find. KRBNradio.com, how easy is that? So, and we've tried to make that website as easy to negotiate as possible, unlike some others I could name.
Absolutely. Anyways, today's main topic is wages and education. Are you upside down in your education and on your investment? And what that means, basically, did you spend a lot more money for your education compared to what you're actually getting out of it, like the bachelor's degree for an entry-level job at McDonald's? So we'll talk about that a little bit.
Interestingly enough, there are an awful lot of jobs that are available that don't require a college education. And as far as being upside down and being able to pay for a college education, there's a lot of that going on.
Oh, absolutely. I'm one of them myself. And but we'll get into that later on in the show. Also, as Cliff brought up earlier in the show, about Twitter, at 2 p.m. Eastern time today, the president is taking questions on Twitter. That's at, if you do the # Ask Obama on your Twitter page, they will take the top questions, and the president apparently will answer that on a live show. And apparently, I think it's a podcast or webcast, which is askobama.twitter.com is where they're going to be broadcasting about it. So if you have a question that you would like to ask the president. And speaking of, that's kind of the related topic to our What the Heck Are They Thinking segment. So we'll just get right into that.
You have got to be kidding me.
What the heck were they thinking?
Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
Okay, as I previously mentioned, the president is taking your questions on Twitter. And the question that, or the topic that they want to talk about is the economy and jobs. That's basically what the only two things they're going to be focusing on. Well, I've been kind of watching some of the... Thank you. By the way, we do have the KRBNradio.com chat room, which somebody just logged into. So if you want to go into that and not have to have a Blog Talk Radio account, you can go there and also listen to that tune. Anyways, the President of the United States is going to be answering your questions about the economy and jobs via live webcast from the White House, and he's taking those questions via Twitter. If you have a question for him, just use the # and then type in as one word, Ask Obama, and their staff will be going through the list and coming up with the best questions. I've been kind of watching some of the questions that people have been putting out there this morning, and kind of took, I won't go through all 20 that I have, but some of them are kind of interesting. So if you have the opportunity to ask the president a question, and he's asking you to ask about economy and jobs, well, let me put it to the round table first before I read the list. Cliff and Bradley, what would you ask the president if you had the opportunity on a tweet?
Whoa, boy. That's a hard one. I would be probably really, what do I want to call it, derogatory in the whole thing, because there are so many things. But I probably, and a tweet, see, I don't know if I could phrase this in a tweet, because I would want to know why, when he goes to the negotiating table, he only negotiates if things go his way. In other words, if you agree with me, we can negotiate. If not, tough. And I think that's the problem he has. I don't know how to phrase that in, what is it, 140 words?
141 characters.
Characters, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's even worse. Yeah, but you can't hardly say anything in that.
Well, and what's odd, too, is that computers usually are 256 is the big number. Bradley, how about you?
Well, honestly, I'd really have to think about it for a little bit. That's my answer right now.
Your answer. Well, here's a sampling of some of the questions that some people have asked. And again, this is supposed to be about economy and jobs. So one of my top questions here, my top 20 list is, and I did not include the tweet person. one of them is the White House hiring, which I thought was a good one. Another one, this one is from Representative Bob Giz, asks, are you getting rid of the absurd and unnecessary paperwork regulations that waste time and money as the administration spews hundreds of pages of rules, of new rules each day? And, okay, but now they get better.
In answer to is the White House hiring, that is not a solution in any way, shape, or form, because the White House has to then pay you. And so, consequently, that comes from us.
Well, true. But, again, it's questioning about the economy and jobs.
And, but that doesn't help the economy.
And, okay, now, again, remember they asked the president, will the Cardinals finally stop whining now they're in the front? Good question for the president.
Yeah, right. Why would the president have any idea?
That's the point. Is it racist for a conservative to disagree with your politics? Is it sexist if a progressive disagreed with Bachman or Palin? Another question somebody's asking the president about jobs and the economy. Can you open this jar of jelly for me? Does your teleprompter have apps? Why do cities in Asia keep changing their names?
Didn't know they did.
Why didn't you repaint the White House?
Oh, brother.
The greenhouse?
Yeah, the greenhouse. Nike or Reebok?
Neither.
They're
both too expensive.
Is it true that Michelle has over 26 servants, which cost taxpayers about $2 million per year?
Actually, yeah. You know, come to think of it, she probably has 26 people that cost the citizens that much money, but they aren't servants, and she has no choice.
Yeah, that's true. And here's a couple more. Again, these are serious questions that people are asking the president about economy and jobs. Will you be recording an album as like all others, American Idol winners?
No.
How frequently do you speak to George Soros?
Who?
George Soros.
Oh.
If a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, do we have to raise taxes to hire somebody to listen for the next one?
Yes.
That's a good one.
And let's see. This one, I guess, kind of goes along.
Hello.
Hello.
Why is...
Just talk. Don't pay any attention.
Okay. Why that Americans must obey the rule of law, but you do whatever you want, no matter what the Constitution laws state?
Now, that goes back to the 28th Amendment. We've got to do something about the fact that our elected officials are better than we are.
Okay, And finally, on my abbreviated list, since you believe in spreading the wealth around, will you give me $1 million right now? If not, why not?
Okay, I'll cash in on that one, or not cash in on it, but step in on it. I'll settle for $10,000. I don't need $1 million. $10,000 would help me out a lot. I have low expectations.
Low expectations. Anyway, these are actual tweets that people are asking the president regarding the economy and jobs. And again, if you go to askobama.twitter.com for more information, and he's going to be answering the top ones at 2 p.m. Pacific time today. So,
see, that's why I think you could do this thing with email or something, but doing it with Twitter, it gets very frivolous, and that's a problem with any of these social media things. 90% of the people who are really active in the social media are rather frivolous about the whole thing. I mean, why would anybody want to go online and put out all their information about themselves and their family on one of these social media sites and make it available for everyone? I've signed up for Facebook, but I have almost no information on there. Same with the only other thing I think I signed up was Twitter. I signed up for something a long time ago that had to do with buying a house, and never got anywhere with that. And I think I'm still a member, but haven't ever gone back to look at it.
Huh. Yeah, it's like MySpace, which I think kind of died off. And I guess Google is trying to come up with their version of Facebook, and they're trying to include video chat or something like that in there.
I'm getting very, very disturbed with Google. I used to always use Google because it was the simplest page and it didn't have all this other crap on it that other, like Yahoo and some of these places do. But now Google is getting more intrusive than any of the rest of them. You have to sign in, and you have to. I'm going to start using a different. There's whole lists of search engines, and I'm going to find another one and start using it, because Google is getting way too intrusive.
Well, same thing with Yahoo. I use Yahoo Mail for my personal email, and they're updating it, and they want me to agree to the new terms of service, which allows them to send advertising to me based on what I email. And I've opted out every time they said that, and at some point they're going to sunset the current email that I use and force me to do it.
That's why I actually have my own website so that I can have my own email, and I don't have to have any extras or anything going on with it. It's not free, but it's not very expensive either.
That's right. And speaking of emails, we also have an email, talk@krbnradio.com. I always have to throw in a promo. And speaking of promos, shall I go ahead and do that now?
Sure, why not?
Okay, we have a sponsor.
Good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Well, by the way, you can also find it real easy by simply going to caribbeanradio.com and clicking on Dancing Dog Cookies, and it'll take you right there.
That's right. Send them a lot of traffic, and by the way, if you would like to sponsor us as well, send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com. We'll take any money that anybody wants to send us, as long as it's legal.
Oh, I don't care if it's legal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to give the IRS your Social Security number and make it easy for them, too?
As I say, I don't give my Social Security number on anything, Facebook or anything else. Hell, I hardly even give it to the Social Security people.
That's true. Anyways, today's topic is wages and education. Does the two go together? If you want to chime in with us, join us in the chat room or call us 646-721-9887. Right now, the lines are open, all five of them.
I got to tell you, right now, right off the top of my head and right off the bat, I mentioned that there are a whole bunch of jobs that are available to people that don't require an education or a college education. Specifically, let me make that clear, a college education. Do you think you'd like to make $117,200 a year?
Yes.
Air traffic controllers do not require a college education, believe it or not. They earn between $88,860, that's entry level, and $142,210 with good benefits for air traffic controllers. And they're always looking for air traffic controllers. And you're eligible to retire at 50 if you have 20 years of experience or after 25 years at any age. So that's, you know, people say, well, you know, you don't make much money if you don't have a college education. Well, to me, $117,200 a year, and that's the median, that's right in the middle, is pretty decent money. Pretty decent money.
Well, interesting enough, because like even the Obama administration and others have always promoted, you know, you need a college education to get ahead. There are some top CEOs, like Steve Jobs, for example, with Apple, doesn't have a college education. Michael Dell from Dell Computers, and these are CEOs, Kenneth Lewis, Bank of America.
A great many of the CEOs, the top CEOs, have worked their ways up and didn't have a college education or had a beginnings of a college education and dropped out or whatever, because a college education does not guarantee you. I mean, overall and on an average, you do make more money if you have a college education, but it also, you have to pay that college education back, and college educations are getting really, 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 really unbelievably expensive.
Oh, absolutely. Mine was, by the time I get through paying it off, $32,000 for an associate's in computer science.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna just take here one of them off the top of my head. MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, is a private college Basically, they cater to engineering students, but just to give you an idea, it costs $201,000 to go through MIT, a full college education to get a degree. And believe it or not, it only pays back 15.5%. So it's going to take you years and years and years to pay that $201,000 off at 15.5%. So is it really beneficial? I mean, I suppose if you're smart enough to go to MIT and such, it'd be nice. And perhaps you can actually get some sort of aid to go to the school or not. But not everybody can get to go there. Not everybody gets the government to pay for it. And the thing is, if we think about this, getting the government to pay for our education, what are we accomplishing? We're not accomplishing anything. We're putting the government more further and further in debt. We haven't accomplished anything about actually getting jobs and getting the government out of debt. It's a big vicious circle if you do that. So and if you pay for it yourself, it's out of range. And if you don't pay for it yourself, you're going to end up paying for it in taxes. So it's a very vicious circle.
And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, the college loan, at least through the federal loan, is not eligible for bankruptcy. If you declare bankruptcy, you can't include that.
Yeah, you can't get away from that college loan. They keep coming after you. And I know as a fact, because of a situation in my family, not specifically me, but they don't ever stop. And you end up actually, if you can't pay for it right away, you end up paying for it like four or five times over. And you end up paying huge, huge amounts of money because they keep selling the loan to different institutions and keep raising the whole thing and going on and on. What just happened?
Oh, that text that came up.
Oh, okay. But anyway, I get scared when these little sounds start popping up. But anyway, you end up paying way, way more than your college education was worth. And you talk about whether you get a return on your investment. You don't. You lose.
Well, and the sales job that they the colleges do to try to get you going to college, and based on my experience, you come in, especially, well, first, but the first step you do is that you talk to the college advisor, and you're assuming that this guy knows what he's talking about. You know, he's the quote unquote advisor, and so you come in kind of with blinders on because chances are you haven't been to college before, so you're trusting them. You don't know what to expect, so you're trusting that the one they're going to direct you in the right direction for your career path. And give you the quality courses that it needs, that you need to achieve that goal. I remember back in 1975 when computers, PCs were first coming out. I mean, I was programming in BASIC and just starting to learn a little bit about assembler, and decided, hey, I'm really good at this. I'm going to go to school and do this for a career. So I went to the local community college here in Eugene, Lane Community, which I'm not afraid to say their name, and they talked me out of it, stating that the market was oversaturated and I'd have a hard time getting a job.
So instead you take an education that you have zero chance of getting a job.
Exactly. Then one of the major companies that I worked for closed their doors in the Springfield area, decided to go back to school again and went back to LCC, because I always loved computers, and I figured, well, here's a chance to be a dislocated worker, go back full-time into a career that I always wanted to do. Right idea, wrong method of doing it, because, again, like I said a few minutes ago, you're expecting a quality education for your money. What I found out, at least based on my experience, that they were more concerned about making you a well-rounded person. And it says that right in their website, lcc.edu. Lane.edu, whatever. I'll look it up here. but making you a more well-rounded person than actually focusing on when you graduate, giving you the tools to get that job.
Well, almost every community college, which is what this is, and regular college does that. Technical colleges don't, but it's very, very disturbing to go there and have them talk you out of things. That's insane. That's just ridiculous.
Well, what's really disturbing, too, is, like I say, you don't know what to expect from the classes because you haven't been there. I mentioned this before in previous programs. For example, writing 121, I should have seen the warning signs when the instructor said on the first day that we're going to do something a little bit different. Well, the topic was Black history, which is okay. That was cool. I learned a lot from it. What I didn't know until I was going into the next progression of writing 122 is that we were supposed to do essays every week. We didn't do one. Every other instructor I talked to that taught writing 121 did essays once a week. So when I got to the next level, I didn't know what an essay was, and so I was not prepared. So, but what do you do? I mean, you've already spent the money. You've already got the credits, which are held against you, you know, and how many you can get for the associate's degree. But how do you know that the instructor is really teaching you what he's supposed to teach you so you can, you know, you can advance to the next level in the progression?
Well, unfortunately, that's supposed to be something that the college does. I mean, the college, you know, if you can, obviously it's not a college you can depend on, and it's not a college you can rely on if they're not going to even be consistent within their own school as to what they teach.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the biggest issue right there is consistency. It shouldn't matter what instructor you go to, like say for writing 121 is my example. Yeah, they may have their different methods of teaching it, but the criteria should all be the same.
Yeah, yeah. And it isn't, unfortunately, at least not in the state of Oregon. And that's why also I've gone to great lengths to look up where the best colleges are and what the best cost per return ratio is for colleges. And not a single Oregon college is on the list. Not a single one of them. The Beavers, whatever they are, that college does show up on one list, but it's very low down at the bottom of the list. And interestingly enough, the state of Washington, for example, does have colleges. The University of Washington is number 87 on a list of a couple hundred colleges that are high in return. But University of Washington, for example, it only cost $81,320 to get a degree from the University of Washington, and their return on investment is 15.6%. Now, that's getting very close to the top of the list. The top of the list is 15.9%. So they're very close to being right up at the top of the list as far as return on investment is concerned, and their investment is significantly less than some of these others that are up around $200,000 and $205,000 and $210,000. So, there are three Washington State universities or universities in Washington that are on this list, and very, very high as far as return on investment is concerned. It's amazing. Most of the really big colleges, of course, California Caltech, we'll get it out. I've heard of it before. Harvey Mudd College seems to be, it's the number two one on the list. But even it's only 13% return on investment. So, and it costs you $203,000 to get a degree from them. So, but I found it very interesting going through the entire list. How many colleges are on this list? 1,000 colleges are on the list, and Oregon doesn't show up anywhere. So that tells you something.
Hmm. Bradley, do you want to jump in here?
Well, I went to a Bible college in Colorado Springs, and what I appreciated about them was the professor or teacher versus student ratio was very low. So I got a really good education, and I'm still paying on it, of course, but I was very pleased with that. Unfortunately, not all the colleges are like that.
Now, that was a private college, wasn't it?
No. They used to be private, but they turned the liberal arts program in there.
It's not a public, not a state college or federal college, is it?
Oh, no. So that definitely makes a difference.
Oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah. But it is amazing. Some of these private colleges are really expensive. And again, you can go after funding and get money to pay for the colleges, but you're just taking it from one pocket and putting it in the other. I mean, you're not accomplishing anything there. You're probably entitled to it, I suppose, if you want to put it that way, because let's face it, everybody's trying to do it. And the federal government is spending a lot of money trying to be able to give you the money, but that's not accomplishing anything. We're taking the money out of the federal tax pockets and putting it in your pocket and then hoping you'll pay it back.
Yeah, and you know, it's a shame, like the community colleges, I know of a few people who have taken advantage of getting the money and then not finishing out their courses and applying for more money, and it's just to live on. That's a shame, too.
Well, you know, they've made it so out of sight that you can't do it any other way, hardly. Mm-hmm. I mean, most places you can't go there unless you do get some sort of funding from someone. And it just goes up in different increments. I mean, they make it more expensive, and then they have to give you more money, and then they give you more money, and they make it more expensive. So it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and speaking of, I was just talking about Lane Community College. I just got an email from them, which is interesting enough as far as timing. And they're bragging about how Lane Community College this spring, 1,790 students applied for degrees and certificates at the end of spring term compared to 1,145 last year. And I just hope that they have a better experience than I do, because one of the things that I learned that a lot of people aren't aware of is how they take advantage of you. You know, like, it takes 90 credits for an associate's degree, roughly, and I think 180 for a bachelor's. Well, what Lane Community College and other colleges like to do is convince you to get into the AAOT transfer degree. Well, the thing about that is that a lot of those classes that you're forced to take do not directly transfer to a university. So you've used up your credits, you used up money that does nothing but to satisfy the local community college requirement for the degree. The best piece of advice I've ever gotten, and if I had the opportunity to continue for a bachelor's, was to go to the university of your choice, find out what 100, 200 level classes directly transfer from a community college, and only take those. That way you won't waste your credits, and you will save money.
But does anybody there, any of your advisors or anything at the college, ever tell you that?
No. Oh, no. No, they want the money.
See, I think they should be required to be upfront about disclosures and things like that, because to go to a college and to spend money to get a class or to go through a class and have it be worthless to you is just criminal, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and here's another little thing. I actually asked an instructor this one time, because it seemed like the 1 and 2 credit classes threw more work at us than the 3 and 4 credit classes. So I finally asked an instructor why that is. And they said that when it comes down to selecting the instructors at the course, the ones with the 10 years, of course, get the 4-credit courses, which, you know, pay more money. So what the instructors do with the 1 and 2 credit courses, they put a lot of work on the students, hoping that they will complain and get the classes raised up from a 1 to 2 credit or 2 to 3 credit course so they can make more money.
Oh.
Actually, again, I believe that it should be a lot more transparency is the new word, I guess, the N word to use nowadays, in what's being done in the schools and in the colleges. And it should be a requirement that they be very open about what's, what they're trying to do and what they're not trying to do, instead of, and of course, as you say, you know, I get very upset. You know, one of the things that really ticks me off, of course, I've been in the radio business for years and years and years, and I sit back and I look at how many broad public broadcasting stations are just in Eugene, for example. There are like four AM radio stations and four or five FM radio stations that are specifically paid for by our educational systems, different schools and colleges and things, all broadcasting basically the same thing from National Public Radio or National Public Broadcasting, whether it be TV or radio, but I'm talking about radio. They're all broadcasting the same thing, not all at the same time necessarily. They break it up and put it on at different times of the day, but ultimately it all comes down to basically the same thing. Each one has a short period of time that they do their own broadcasting and their own programming, and the rest of the time it's National Public Radio. And so we get it all over the dial. And it's very, very disturbing to me that they would allow the public broadcasting system to cover so much, and they buy each one of these stations and pay for them. That, again, is us paying for them. And now they go out and do what I call their breakathons and try to get more money and to pay for more and more and more of them. I would rather see them, because just KLCC, Lane Community College, just since we're picking on them, they've got like seven transmitters around the area that they've bought and paid for, and they're broadcasting all on all seven of them exactly the same thing. And they don't even do legitimate station identifications on them. They don't do it very well. And so I get really upset that they are allowed to do that. I think the public could be better served by putting different programming on each of these stations and making it available, making them available to independent broadcasters instead. That's my rant for the day, I guess.
Your rant for the day?
For the hour.
Okay.
We'll wait 20 more minutes and go another one.
Probably so. Well, here's my rant. 646-721-9887. Give us a call if you have an experience with education, wages, or any other comments that you'd like to present us. Don't be afraid. If you've never called a talk show before, now is a good opportunity. 646-721-9887.
You know, the only I guess, what do I want to call it, sort of a community college, Evergreen State College in the state of Washington, it shows up on this list of best colleges, and it's way down on the list, granted, but it's also only $118,000 to get a degree from them. But Evergreen State College is kind of an interesting college, because it started out specifically as a community college, and it's grown considerably since then, but it's still a public college. It's not a private college, and interesting that it made it on the list, where an awful lot of other smaller colleges like that have not made it on the list. I specifically have been impressed with the fact that the California State University colleges, you know, UCLA and those are also public colleges. And almost all of them have made it on this. So they've actually worked very hard at becoming a very good public system. So it can be done, but not in Oregon. We've lost everybody.
No, I'm still here. I'm still here. I was multitasking and not multitasking very good.
I was in deep thought.
I ran out of thought. So anyway, that's the whole thing, because, again, you know, Evergreen State College is $118,000 to get a full education, and they have an 8.1% payback or return on investment. It pays back 8.1% a year. So it still takes you quite a while to pay for it, but it's there. It's a lot cheaper than, like I say, going to MIT or one of these big Princetons. For Princeton is $198,000. It gives you a 15% payback, which is still, you've got twice as much money involved, so you have to get a bit, twice as much payback in order to even begin to think of paying for it.
Well, speaking of payback, one of the questions that I brought up during my stint in college is, what actually are you getting for your money? And what checks and balances are there? I mean, there's a couple times that I had to remind the instructor, especially one or two with an attitude, that I am paying you for service. But some of them, you know, came across with, well, you know, I am God and... But,
really?
But yeah, they were just flabbergasted to be reminded of the fact that, you know, I'm paying hard-earned money for... I'm not here because I got nothing better to do. I'm here because I want an education. I'm taking my education seriously. And I want to better myself, you know. And I'm insisting that you teach the course that I'm paying you to teach me. And they're just flabbergasted, you know. I even had one instructor, I won't say his name. It was in the computer-related field. And it was a part where they were teaching about the actual insides of a computer and how things are wired together and stuff. And he took it as a joke. You know, it's like I felt like it was a total waste of time. Now, granted, being a lifelong technician, you know, I know quite a bit what goes on in the computer. But even still, you know, you always learn something new no matter what you take. But when they take it as, oh, well, here's a power supply. We plug this in here. Okay, great. Let's go to lunch.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it is unfortunate that, like you say, an awful lot of these professors in some of these colleges are not there for the student. They're there for the buck. And if the students actually try to go off subject or delve into something a little deeper, they can't be bothered.
Exactly. I mean, I had a couple students that followed me through the course, and on the, I think it was the next to the last term. Now these guys, they were successful in the college because they've already did the job. They were just going to get the degree, just to kind of make it, you know, make themselves more sellables. So they were in the back and they were playing video games on the computers in the back, because each of our desks had a computer on them, and that's fine and everything, but if they would do it quietly, but instead, you know, they'd be chit-chatting very loudly, and the instructor wouldn't do anything. Finally, I think the second to the last term, I interrupted the instructor and said, you know, if the instructor's not going to say it, I'm going to say it. Will you guys please just shut up? I'm trying to hear the instructor, and I can't with you guys chatting back there. And I was kind of embarrassed the instructor, but, you know, it's his job to maintain order in the classroom. In fact, at the University of Oregon, I attended a class that had literally 300 people in a stadium-style classroom. He kept good order in that classroom.
Yeah.
Well, just to make you feel even worse.
Thank you.
I'll continue on with some of these things that you can do that don't require necessarily a college education. For example, police and detective supervisors, first-line police and detective supervisors. You can work up through the ranks and become a supervisor by passing exams and achieving good performance reviews and advanced training and such things within the job itself. And they pay $69,300 average pay for police and detective supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think of an occupation too much as a funeral director, but a funeral director actually does pay $50,000 a year. That's the medium pay. There's a lot of people getting more and a lot of people get less. But a funeral director is one thing that you don't have to have a college education to do. Police and sheriff patrol officers, the actual patrol officers themselves, make a medium pay of $47,460 a year. Now, there's no way you'd get me to be one of those, but a lot of people would like being a police or a sheriff's patrol officer. I find it very scary, and I wouldn't want to be one, and I'm very glad that someone else does want to be one. But the nice thing about that is with a lot of these sheriff's offices and police things, you get really good retirement services after 25 or 30 years of service. that you can do. Now, here's one that I find very interesting, because you mentioned the sales job that the colleges do on you.
Mm-hmm.
Advertising and sales agents are one of the most productive jobs in the world, and you don't have to have a degree to be in advertising or sales. In fact, an awful lot of people don't have. Now, they put down here that $42,750 is the median wage for sales agents. That depends, of course, entirely on how hard you want to work and how much time you want to spend at it, because salespeople can make big money. And $42,000, I've known salespeople that can make $100,000 a year with no real trouble at all. Now, it's granted very true that they do spend a lot of time doing that. Real estate brokers and sales agents, the same thing. They list it as $40,000 as the average, but they can make a lot more money than that, depending on how hard they want to work. In fact, a great many of my lists right here say make up to $111,500 a year by being a salesman or a real estate broker. And, of course, depends on what you're willing to put out. I mean, but it still doesn't require a college education of any sort. It doesn't hurt if you want to go out and get an education. But basically, you do have to get pass an exam and get a state license. And so I have always felt if you have to pass an exam and get a state license, why do I need to go to school and get a license for, I mean, education for 1,000 other things that have nothing to do with what I'm doing?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, I'll go back to the community colleges. At Lane Community, we had to take a course that was called Human Relations at Work, and it was specifically designed with the college's theme of, you know, making you a more well-rounded person. We had three terms of PE that was required, and it's like, well, what does either one of them have to do with networking, you know?
Really?
Or with anything else for that matter. I can't remember half the classes that I've taken that weren't directly related to my degree. I took a ton of math classes, which, yes, in computers, math is required, but I have yet in real life found a use for the quadratic equation and imaginary numbers. But I suppose that someday somebody might come up to me on the street and asked me, you know, if I could solve a quadratic equation for them, but that hasn't happened yet.
I'm sorry, I don't even know how to ask that question, so consequently, I can't help you. But it is, if I can understand, if you're going to middle school or elementary school or high school, the required educational system, that they can try to make you a well-rounded person. But if I'm paying for my education, I don't want them to try to make me a well-rounded person. I want them to give me what I'm paying for.
Well, that's exactly my point. And when I went to the U of O, for example, one of the courses, it was an arts and letters requirement. We had to watch these videos and do a book report on the videos, you know, on the big screens. And this instructor apparently had something for Swedish language, because he always played these things in Swedish language with huge, translation letters on the back, it's called, escapes me at the moment. That's part of getting older. But
subtitles.
Thank you, subtitles. And when you're watching on the big screen, I mean, they're huge. And so you're trying to read, I'm dyslexic, you're trying to read the subtitles and keep up with what's going on. And especially, you know, it's even harder to figure, okay, who's the person speaking, because you're, you know, again, paying attention to the subtitles. And anyways, a couple of weeks into the course, he accidentally selected English.
Hmm?
And he goes, no, I don't want it in English. I want to go back to Swedish.
What?
I stopped him at the end of the class that day. And I, you know, pulled him aside privately. And I says, you know, it really takes a lot to offend me. And I says, you know, this is America. We speak English here. And I said, it would make it a lot easier to follow this video if it was in English than if it was in Sweden. And also, I pointed out that it said nothing in the course description that this would be a foreign language class. Oh, man, did he get mad at me. You know, there's times when you pick your battles, but that was one I wasn't going to get into, the I'm paying you battle. But it was a really interesting experience being in that course and in the university to begin with. Like, for example, when it came time for midterms, you had to go to the bookstore and buy these little tiny green books to write your answers into instead of using a full-size 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. You know, you had to get this, I don't know, 8 by 8 or something, a very small book, kind of dumb. I don't know. It was a very interesting experience. I only stayed with the U of O for one term. I couldn't get the hell out of there fast enough.
Well, unfortunately, there seems to be a lot of that going around, and I've mentioned 10 different jobs that you can get that require no higher education to speak of as far as public education is concerned, or a lot of them require taking exams and getting licensed to do the job, but they do it from within. There are another over 100,000 of those jobs available, and you can go online and look them up. But they do pay halfway decent wages, some of them. And, of course, an awful lot of them, they give you the the median amount of money, like the sales agents and real estate brokers and things like that, the median amount of money that people are making. But it's up to you on any of those. You can make a huge amount of money because everybody, every good salesman, every really good salesman has a job.
Right. I mean,
they all have a job because they can make good money at it, and they're in huge demand. So it's down to the mediocre salesmen that are available for jobs if they're looking for something. And then all you have to do is convince them that they need to work a little harder, and perhaps maybe as an employer, if you're an employer looking for a salesperson, you can guide them along and teach them a little more about how your particular business goes, and they can make more money. But real estate agents, they've got that listed as $40,000 average a year, and yet they admit right here that the highest 10% of the people who are real estate agents and real estate brokers are making more than $111,000 a year. That's pretty darn good money.
Yeah, it's like you say, why go to school? Or go get your certificate, or go to a technical college, which I wish I would have done, like up in Portland, ITT. But I didn't because their courses are every other day, and get the education to make you skilled so you can hit the ground running.
Would that have cost you much more money than LCC?
It would have cost a little bit more, but comparing the two, because I did have the opportunity to go up to Portland and I got to see the site and got to talk to some people up there, they offer a little bit more than what LCC offers. Like, for example, after you graduate, ITT will let you come in and sit in on any course that's related to your degree for free.
Wow.
They have job services. Their advisory committee is made up of over 28 people, 20 different companies ranging from UPS to the FBI. Lane, when I was there, they had 7 companies, which is ranging from, I don't know, Joe's Coffee House or something. It wasn't very impressive listing. In fact, I was invited to attend a meeting of the advisory committee, and only 2 of them showed up.
Huh.
And so, again, comparably, but the thing about the private colleges, too, they're not just going to rubber stamp you through. You know, they have to, for their existence, they have to produce successful students.
Yeah, that's the problem with LCC is a community college. It's being paid for half or more by the state or the federal government. I mean, you're not paying the full amount that they're making, so they're not really too interested in the students. They get more money no matter. It's like public schools. They get paid X amount of dollars per student, whether they do anything or not, and whether they teach them anything or not, and they don't care what happens to them after they're done. They need to be held to a higher standard than that. I would consider, if I'm going out and borrowing money to go to a school, I want to go to one that's going to pay more attention to me than anybody else, because I'm the one that's their total means of support.
Exactly. That's exactly why I like the Nazarene Bible College.
Exactly. You know, you're going to specifically going to a college that's designed for what you want to do to begin with, and then and they're more going to be more interested in you because you're paying the whole thing, not the state or the federal government.
Exactly.
You know, what's really interesting is when I my very first class, my professor, we had 15 students in our class. Three of them were female, and he took the time about a month before to study our resume or whatever you call it, and information. And he knew who I was, what I looked like, what I liked, what I disliked, and, you know, memorized my name. So right when I got in there, it was like I had been a student there for years already.
Oh, wow.
I learned so much better that way.
You won't find that at LCC.
No.
No, definitely not.
And he put me right up front because he found out that I had problems seeing the chalkboard, and frankly, I had a problem paying attention, too, so... sitting at the very front row, I did very well in college.
Yeah, it kind of helps when you can't get away from him, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're in arm's throw length, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you mentioned the fact that it was the high or low student to professor ratio that you thought that was great. I can understand that that's great, but I honestly believe that the teachers or professors or whomever, if they know what they're doing and they are good instructors, can handle larger classrooms. When I went to high school, for example, there was 35 and 37 people per classroom, per student, per instructor or teachers. And we never had any problem because the school I went to was a small high school in a small city, but they were very academically inclined and as well as sports, and they did actually have very good teachers. And so even though we had large classrooms, there was only one teacher that I know of that really didn't have close control of her students. But interestingly enough, everybody learned something in her class, although it wasn't necessarily what she was teaching. She got up there and would tell stories, and she was an older lady. And she had lots and lots of very interesting stories, and we all got involved in her stories. So we learned a lot, but she was an English teacher, and I guess it all had to do with English because she was using good English. So, but she didn't necessarily stand up there and give tests and the things that you normally would think of an English teacher of doing. But she definitely had control of her students because they were very involved in what her stories were.
Yeah, but like you said, that's not what the that's not what you were paying or going to the class for.
Actually, and I guess in a way it was, because in English, almost anything you do has to do with English. And she did give us the tests, and if we didn't pass the tests, we were in trouble. So we had to learn something, and we all and nobody actually, I don't think anybody failed that course, and it wasn't because she graded liberally either. She did it to you, but you know, if you didn't do a good on a test for the next couple of weeks after that, you didn't get the stories. You had to work on the book from the book, so to speak. And so if you wanted to hear the stories, you better study on your own and be able to pass the test. So she had control of the class, only it was in a little different way.
That's true. And by the way, we have 30 minutes remaining in the program. 646-721-9887. We have one person in the chat room right now. Welcome. And if you'd like to give us a call and join the conversation, 646-721-9887. If you are listening to the program on the archives, send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com. One thing I wanted to kind of touch on real quick is, again, relating back to my experience, and it's a problem that other people have ran into as well. As I previously mentioned, I went to college at LCC in 75, and I earned, I think it was 90 credits. I took a course in automotive, which wasn't a career I wanted to go through, but I learned a lot. I mean, it applied to part of my technical career. When I returned to college in 2003, thanks to becoming a full-time student, you know, a dislocated worker, I ran into a battle that I had to deal with both University of Oregon and LCC regarding financial aid. The first year of the program was paid for by the state of Oregon because of the dislocated worker program. But getting into, I believe it was the first 6 months, I got a letter from the administration office saying that I would be placed on academic probation because I have earned too many lifetime credits. Now, to get an associate's degree or bachelor's degree, they require you to, within a reasonable time, usually 2 to 3 years, to reach like 90 credits. You know, anything longer than that, they don't consider. Because the whole point is to, you know, if you're taking more than 3 years to get an associate's degree, something's wrong. They were counting credits that were 30 years old. And so about every other month, I'd be constantly fighting financial aid regarding maximum credit limit is what it was called. And so when I went into the University of Oregon, I was running up the same issue that there was no guarantee I'd have enough funding with my student loans to make it through a bachelor's program. Well, anyways, I called the federal administration's office, the people that administer the financial aid program, and they said they never heard of any such thing about a college holding credits 30 years old against you regarding financial aid.
Well, Oregon does seem to go by their own book.
Well, it was basically University of Oregon and Lane Community. When I went to ITT Tech and to talk with them about it, they said, "Oh no, we don't go back 30 years on your credits. We can start out, where I should be." But at that point, I was so tired of fighting the colleges, and you know, it's just like, do I want to take the chance and go a couple more years, get more highly in debt, and still walk away with the experience that I had? And at that point, I just said, "No, I'm at least going to walk away with something. I got my associate's degree." Although it's not worth the 5x7 index card it's printed on, and I'm not kidding about that. That's really about the size of the degree itself. And
well, according to the College Board, and this is the actual College Board, this is not an independent study, but according to the people who think you should go to college, it takes 14 years before a college grad pays off most of its loan. Actually, whether it's worth it or not, it starts to become not worth it 14 years before going to college actually starts to pay off. During that time, high school pays off. Just having a high school education, you make about the same for the first 14 years. You make more money, but you don't get to keep any of it. You have to use it to pay off loans and things like that. So you're not accomplishing anything for that first 14 years. In the long run, a college education might pay off a little bit. And 14 years from now, you're probably going to have to go back to school and catch up on what you've not gotten before, because things change in 14 years. So it's a never-ending battle, and you never end up paying for it. And it's not really, in every instance, logical to go to a college. Oftentimes, I think people are going to find that just graduating from high school, if they pay attention and do their thing and don't just go out and slough off, they're just about as well off, if not better.
Well, the thing is, some businesses look at, they don't care what the degree is in. They just want you to have a degree.
And see, that right there should tell you that it's stupid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I met a guy, he went to the University of Oregon, got a bachelor's degree in music. And he told me that the advisors told him that, because he was interested in being a teacher. He wanted to be a music teacher. And so they hyped him up, saying, you know, all this opportunity and everything. And, basically, where I met him was at the truck driving school. His bachelor's degree is made him a truck driver, basically.
Right. There's an awful lot. See, that's the sad part. There's an awful lot of people with these bachelor's degrees and whatever. Nobody, again, in the college system, in the actual public college system, prepares you for anything. They just give you an education, and that really, you should be getting that in high school They shouldn't have to go to college to get that and pay that kind of money. We're just spreading our education out further and further and further. Now I notice that we've got preschools that are now public education. We start our kids in school at like 2 years old. I mean, this is getting ridiculous as to how long you end up being in school. It's the schools have become the babysitters for all of our nation's children, and that's not what it was supposed to be originally.
Well, and it'd be okay. Cause, I mean, I've always said kids are pretty smart when they're young, but I still think the schools are dumbing them down. What are they learning? You know, how to play with a purple dinosaur?
Really, really. Really, that's true. And the cost of colleges is going up and up and up and up. 4-year colleges cost about $7,600. And we're talking about public colleges, state colleges, not private colleges. Private colleges, on the average, charge $27,000 or higher per year. And that's per year, $27,000. I mean, that's an awful lot of money for somebody to try to put out to send you to college. And it just doesn't need to be that much at this particular point, especially since most of these colleges are actually getting money from the state and the federal government to pay for the professors and all the facilities. Where is all this money going? Where is all this, you know, it's just outrageously expensive.
I totally agree with you. Like I said, again, what are you getting for it? Like comparing the ITT Technical Institute with Lane Community College in the technical program, for example, ITT in the robotics program actually had a real robot. They had a Motoman. I can't remember the model number, but it was exactly like the one that we used to do at my previous job, except a smaller version of it. The one we had at my job was about the size of those robots that they use in assembling cars, and that was my job. I was working on those machines there. The one at LCC had one that was made out of a Tinker toy that sat on a desk. Yeah, it functioned. I mean, if you picked up a little chess piece, put it on a conveyor, and it went to the other end, the other robot saw it, picked it up, put it on the conveyor, and stuck it in the thing. I mean, yeah, it's I don't know, it gives you the basics, but if you went in there and could tell an employer, yeah, I worked on a brand name, Motoman, and I know how to program the MRC, you're going to get a lot better than going, well, yeah, I learned how to do the GE FUNAC PLC, and we programmed a stoplight.
Really, really. Yeah, you know, it gets a little ridiculous what they consider a robot. Anything can be a robot, and sometimes it's just sad. I notice I watched on television a couple of times this. It's a program where they have robots fighting each other and doing this. Cause I noticed that most of the students that are building those robots are actually high school kids. They're not college kids. The colleges aren't doing their job. The high schools are stepping in a lot of instances and doing it for them. And we pay the money to the colleges instead of the high schools. So.
Well, again, it gets back to my point, is if you are a hiring manager, and especially because most of these colleges, their entry-level programs is what they're going for, which is okay because you got to get started somewhere. But to get the job, you're going to have to – the employer is going to take a look at several things. One, the reputation of the college that you went to, and the other one, the courses that you were taught. One of my classmates had to go to Arizona, and this is what he told me. He said, I had to go to Arizona to have somebody take my education seriously.
Yeah, yeah. And that's too bad because, you know, if you've got a college, it becomes very, very, very important for students to research a college and go to a college that's being recognized, has nothing to do with where you want to live or partying and all that kind of stuff. And of course, that just puts it back on the student themselves. If you're going to become a stellar college student, if you sit down and research and really take interest in what you're doing, you can accomplish a great deal more. But if you're going to take the time to sit down and research and do that kind of thing, you can probably research it enough to get there without going to a college. So it's kind of an interesting thing. College maybe turns out to be for the lazy person. The lazy person can do better by going to a college and just relying on the fact that you've got that 5x7 degree you were talking about that says you can do something. But that's the sad part. It really doesn't say you can do anything. It just says that you've passed this course. And it doesn't necessarily mean the course has anything to do with what you're trying to get a job for. So.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like Lane Community, for example, they are really pushing the high school kids to go to the college, of course. I mean, it's more money for them. But the kids that go in with the attitude that I'm just going to take the courses where I get the easy A, okay, great. If that's all you want is just the grade, but if you want to walk away and with some type of education, you're really doing yourself a disservice.
If you really want to walk away with an education that's going to pay off in the long run, going to these private schools like ITT are probably the way to go because they're more concerned about getting you a job than they are about making sure that you know how to tie your shoes.
Exactly. In fact, I want to go ahead and our listener in the chat room really makes a good point that I want to bring up, which kind of goes along with the current presidency about trying to get more people into college. When you try to get more students into college, it's a huge mistake because it really waters down the college education. I mean, like, well, you know, live in a college town here in Eugene, it almost takes a bachelor's degree just to go flip hamburgers.
Unfortunately, that's true, and we're getting to the point that we want colleges in every community and want more than one in every community, and that just really doesn't accomplish a thing other than the fact that it, well, in the state of Oregon, a college is a joke as far as I'm concerned, but because it all has to do with sports. It has nothing to do with education. I went online and I put in things like, what's the best college in Oregon? And it came up with hundreds and hundreds of things. Every single one of them had to do with sports. It had nothing to do with education. So I put in, what is the best education college in Oregon? And it still brought up sports. I only got a couple of things about education. I've tried every possible conceivable way of finding out what the best college in Oregon is as far as getting an education, well-rounded education, anything. And it basically always came up with sports. People in Oregon are here for sports. They're not here for an education. So I find it a very sad commentary on the state of Oregon for us. Any kind of education is concerned.
I agree with you. 15 minutes left in the program, 646-721-9887. And I'm glad you brought up sports because the University of Oregon, for example, pretty soon they're going to change the name from Eugene to the University of Oregon because the U of O Ducks has grown so significantly with the stadiums and everything duck-wise and Nike because Phil Knight puts a lot of money into in the U of O. Of course, he gets a lot of money back out of it. That it is. It's more. The focus is more on the sports end of it, and I know that this is especially living in Eugene that I'll probably get really chastised for saying it. But I get tired of seeing duck things everywhere. Duck, 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 duck.
Well, and interestingly enough, the only college that's really mentioned in national circles is not the University of Oregon. It's not Eugene, but it's the Beavers. It's the other one.
Yeah. Now, OSU, Oregon State University, which is the Beavers, to give them credit, they have a lot of their funding comes from the patents that they've gotten because it's more of a scientific college.
Yeah.
Where the University of Oregon is more of an artsy style college. So,
Well, the thing is, whatever it is, the Oregon State University, the Beavers, are getting more recognition nationwide than the University of Oregon. And they're doing it right, obviously, because that's going to do more for their students than any of the other colleges in the state are doing.
Well, that's true. And I was just thinking about NewsArc. I don't have it in front of me, and I don't think I got time to pull it up. The University of Oregon is wanting to separate themselves from the state of Oregon as far as their funding and other controls that are over them.
I saw that coming up, which actually just makes it even worse because basically they're going to rely more and more on Nike because that's where they get their money. I mean, you know, might as well call it the University of Nike or something.
Might as well. And again, it wouldn't really make that much difference. But when it gets back down to the student, you know, as you're saying, what for your bachelor's degree, what, $80,000 roughly? You know, 4 years of your life?
No, it's $180,000.
$80,000 for a four-year degree?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's for a degree. I think some of them are six, but whatever.
Okay. Again, you know, you go through the education, you're hoping that when you get that degree that it will get you into a career that you wanted to go in and that you're going to get paid. When whether you University of Oregon or other colleges deciding that they want to separate from, like, say, the state of Oregon control or whatever. I guess what I'm saying is it gets back to the checks and balances. You know, are you doing the service? Are the student a disservice, or are you doing them a service?
Well, you got to remember what student they're interested in. They're interested in sports. They're interested in that kind of a student. They're not interested in academic students. So consequently, if they're going to do that, then maybe they are using good judgment to disassociate themselves with the educational system. It's kind of sad, but there it is.
Yeah. Anyway, we got 13 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887, or join us in the chat room if you wish.
I wanted to mention is I found it quite interesting, and you probably, I don't know if you followed any of this or not, but I find that the in the Anthony Casey prosecution that they found her not guilty of murdering her daughter, and I found that quite interesting. After all of this and all of this time, basically they said that nobody actually proved that a murder took place. They granted we know that the girl is dead. But they don't know it was done by a murder because they have no actual proof of anything. And so the jury had to return a not guilty determination. They did say that it says after the trial in which Anthony's defense team alleged that her father attempted to cover up Kaylee's death, one of the jurors mentioned that the Anthony family is dysfunctional. That's to say the least. Dysfunctional, I think, but I can understand. Now they're going to go tomorrow and decide what kind of a determination they're going to make as to what she's going to get, if she's going to get any jail time or what's going to happen. But I find it real and interesting that she got off basically scot-free almost. She's going to be stuck with something, but I don't know what.
Sticking to the line of the education thing, your years in commercial broadcast, did you have to take any type of courses to get started? And how do you feel about the courses that they do offer? If somebody wanted to get into broadcast today, do you have any advice for them?
Well, interestingly enough, things have changed a huge amount since when I actually got into broadcasting. When I got into broadcasting, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of little independent radio stations. Nowadays, all of those have been bought up by big giant corporations, and they're all run out of one big studio somewhere in Nashville or something. And so you've got 150, 200 stations all running with one disc jockey. But I did not go to any kind of a school to learn how to be a disc jockey or to be in broadcasting. I actually went to a radio station and asked for a job when I was 16 years old, and they put me on the air midnight to 6 to just with a disc jockey that was there at full time, and he taught me how to do the job. Well, mind you, I had been doing it in my backyard and in my garage for 2 years before that, so I was pretty well conversant with what needed to be done and what didn't need to be done. I didn't know the actual ins and outs of professional broadcasting, but I had actually built my own radio station. So after 1 month of that, of me being there with that disc jockey, at no pay, by the way, just learning how to do it. After 1 month, the disc jockey went to the boss and said, pay him. And so I started out at minimum wage, which, of course, in those days was a grand total of $1.25 an hour. Whoopee. But, of course, that was when $1.25 an hour meant something. So, no, I did not go to school to learn how to be a broadcaster. I actually just learned it on the job, so to speak, and learned how to do it. I learned it on my own, technically, because I did it before I actually went to the radio station. But that's where I got started. That's the problem. Nowadays, I don't think you can go to a broadcast station and work for free and learn how to do something. I do know a couple of people recently in the last 10 years who actually have gone to a radio station and worked midnight to 6 at very low wages in order to learn how to do it. And one of them has gone on to become more, and the other one's still working at midnight to 6 after 10 years. But he wasn't that concerned with doing anything else. So I, as far as an education is concerned, I don't know that there's much of anybody. I see a lot of schools, not so much now, but for a few years there were a huge amount of schools that were teaching you how to be a broadcaster. 95% of those were just taking your money just like all these other people. They were not really teaching you much of anything, and you didn't necessarily get a job when you were through. They'd take people who couldn't even talk and run them through these schools and try to make them disc jockeys, and it just doesn't work. You've got to have some sort of a pension for it to begin with. So I don't know that any of these schools, if you really are interested in being a disc jockey, you almost have to go to some sort of a school, but it's entirely on your shoulders. You have to be the one that's actually going to work hard at doing it. And just because you have a problem talking, I know a guy who went through a broadcast school, and he stuttered. He was a stutterer. But he learned that when you turned the microphone on, the stutter went away. I mean, it was just amazing. I knew this guy. I talked to him, and he could hardly even talk to you. But turn that microphone on, and it went away. He was a disc jockey, and he was an announcer, and a good one. So you have to work at it, and you have to overcome the adversities yourself. And so even if you do go to a school, they can't really do it for you. You still have to do it. They can give you some of the controls and show you some of the equipment that's being used nowadays and maybe teach you how to run a computer. But if you aren't really into that and aren't really pretty well conversant with it in the first place, you're just going to spend a lot of money on nothing. So learn how to do it and then go to school and get a college degree and that says you can do it. And nowadays, again, that college degree helps you a lot. Some people won't hire you without it, but the jobs are few and far between in broadcasting nowadays, very few and very far between. So you got to work real hard at getting one. Sales is the place to go. That's, if you can learn to be a salesman, that's where you make the money.
Yeah, but where do you go to learn to be a salesman? I mean, I doubt you go to school for that.
Well, yes, you can go to school for that, but not too many of them. But if you think you can sell, it's one of those, the thing on my list here of people, they only put you down at like $50,000 a year medium wage, but they do admit that you can, that they're 10% of them make $110,000 a year or more. So depend on how hard, again, it all boils down to you. Even if you do go to a school or don't go to a school, it really makes very little difference. You've got to put in the effort. And that's the problem that I find with colleges, is that they make you think you don't have to put in the effort. You can go there and you can read a book and presto, you can know what you're doing and go out and get a job. And that's just not the case. You have to be prepared to work and work hard at it, no matter whether you go to college or you don't go to college. Either way, you're going to have to be prepared to work hard at it if you want to make good money.
Well, and also, again, I'll make a point to the in the chat room. He makes a very good point here that apprenticeships are always good because, you know, the companies are investing in the students, so to speak. I mean, you learn a lot in apprenticeships. It's a paid position normally, and you get an opportunity to get a break into the field that you want to go into. And I know the state of Oregon has quite a few apprenticeship programs that I highly recommend looking into if somebody wants to get a job. But you know, they.
But are they state programs or are they private?
It's a combination of both, but the state, I believe, does give tax credits to some of the businesses that do offer them. And I think that's really great because, you know, if somebody is really going to take it seriously, you can learn a lot.
But even if you're giving tax credits, it's still a private organization as a general. I don't think there's very many, if any, I don't know of any technical schools in the state of Oregon that are really outstanding as far as Oregon state educational system is concerned. Right. Technical schools, as far as private schools are concerned, yes, they do have some outstanding schools, but they don't have anything to do with the Oregon educational system.
Well, I'd like to see more opportunities, even for the internship programs. But again, I'd like to see a little bit more checks and balances on it. When I did an internship with, I'm not going to say the name of the company, but it was supposed to be computer related, and I was supposed to learn about servers and whatever. I wound up spending most of my time helping them move from one location to another and building desks.
Oh, great.
Well?
But then it's just like what's called the, I think it's not the internship, but it's the two courses that are required, that were required in the program were in the college itself. You're supposed to get some hands-on interim or something like that. Mm-hmm. Some of my fellow students, they were ghosting hard drives. What they had me do was taping a string onto a key for the removable hard drives and taping that onto the body of the computer.
Oh, wow.
Or what? The other thing I ran into is like our local utility company here. I went ahead and interviewed them for an internship, and they said that, well, based on your experience as a technician, there's nothing we can teach you. Well, yeah, I'm a technician, not a computer person. That's what I went to school for.
The thing is, if there's nothing they can teach you, then give me the degree and let me go.
Yeah.
I mean, if I've already know it, then why can't you give me the degree? Even if you have to take a test or whatever, doesn't make any difference. But this business of you can't get the degree if you don't take the classes, and you can't take the classes because you already know it, that's catch-22 stuff, and should be, again, it's criminal. It should not be allowed.
Well, and with 2 minutes remaining, speaking of opportunities, is Cliff, you've known me for years, and I don't know if you want me to mention the name of the radio station that you used to work for, but the deal with their network, you know.
That's how I met Robin. Is she came in and networked. I was working at KNND in Cottage Grove, and she came in and networked their computers. Two other people had worked hard at it twice before and had not gotten where it should be done. She came in and I know of myself, one of those organizations came in at least 8 or 9 times over a course of 3 months to try to get this thing put together. And they spent several hours there each time they were there, but they didn't get it done. They got part of it done, but not all of it done. And I kid you not, this is just totally insane, but came in and in 20 minutes had it working. Just 20 minutes she brought it. And part of that time was spent in going out and getting her laptop. So out of the car, she hadn't brought that with her, but she brought it in, plugged it into the system, and sat down and clicked a few things, and presto, her laptop told her what to do. Well, it only told her what to do because she could read it. It told me nothing, but it worked, and that's what counts. And we got this to work. So I was totally astounded. I still am, but I'm also totally astounded that you can't turn that into a job.
Yeah, and that's where I was hoping the degree would get me, is open up the opportunities. Anyways, we're out of time for this week's show. We'll be back again next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. If you have a topic of interest, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We always love to hear from our listeners, so don't hesitate. See y'all next week.
By the way, Bradley, be prepared to talk next time.
Yeah.
If you like today's show, please let us know by visiting us on Facebook and clicking on the Like button. You can also get show updates on Twitter and on our website at www.krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.